Thank you for listening to The Rest is History. For bonus episodes, early access, ad-free listening, and access to our chat community, sign up at restishistorypod.com. That's restishistorypod.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we get started today, this was supposed to be our big announcement of our first live show in a year. It's on the 13th of November in London.
But we released the tickets early to our club members and they've pretty much sold out. Now, it is still possible to join the waiting list. The link is in the episode notes where you can search The Rest is History Live.
So, as I said, this was going to be our only live show in 2022. So we're very sorry if you've missed out. And if you don't want to miss out in the future, you can always join the club at restishistorypod.com, restishistorypod.com. But we're going to try and work out if there's something else we can do.
We're going to see if we can work out some other arrangements or maybe one extra show or we'll see when we come. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I'll keep you posted on that. And in the meantime, even if you don't want to join the Rest is History Club, just keep listening.
Hello and welcome to the Rest is History's Love Island. The couples are on their way to the island, bronzed, buffed, stripped, and ready. Yes, it is that time of the year again. And if you're wondering what I'm talking about, don't ask me because this is not my idea. It's the idea of my co-presenter, Tom Holland, who reveals himself to be an unexpected reality TV show enthusiast. So, Tom, what is Love Island and why are we doing it?
I don't really know because I've never watched it.
Oh, no.
But we are a podcast, are we not, that responds to great public events. So we've responded to political events, to sporting events, to all kinds of occasions.
Yeah.
And there is no question that here in Britain, Love Island is a big event. We are obviously huge. Both kind of 273, so it completely passes us by. However, I have two daughters. And you may remember that last year, my younger daughter, Eliza, persuaded us to do a version of Love Island on our episode on Henry VIII's Six Wives.
One by Anne Boleyn.
Yeah, one by Anne Boleyn, who absolutely iconic contestant. And so this time around, I thought it would be good. We'll do a whole episode themed around Love Island. But because I've never watched it and I don't really know how it works.
Tom, your research has let you down completely.
No, but I have an elder daughter who is on hand and is at the end of this microphone. So a great, great thrill to welcome to the podcast my elder daughter, Katie. Welcome to The Rest is History.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a childhood dream.
So, Katie, just for the benefit of the many British listeners and the many overseas listeners who may have no idea what Love Island is, could you just give us a very, very brief sketch about what it involves?
Of course. So it's been going on now, I believe, for 6 seasons. And essentially, Love Island is where you get a group of very good looking people onto an island in Mallorca, and they're completely cut off from the outside world. So they have a phone, but they can only talk to the other islanders on the phone. They have no idea what people are saying on Twitter, which is kind of part of the fun, is looking at all the memes that come out of the show. And essentially the aim of the show is to win So you get 50 grand at the end of it, and you can decide whether you are going to split that money with your partner or you're going to keep it. So the aim of the game is to show, are you really in it for love, or are you doing it?
Are you selfish, egocentric grasper?
Yeah, to become an influencer and sell, yeah, and like sell expensive toothpaste on Instagram.
But how does the contest, so what are they doing? Are they kissing? What are they? Because my son says some of the girls at school, some of the 10-year-old girls have seen it, but they call it the love kiss show. So presumably there must be some love kiss as well as islanding going
on. Yeah, good question. So every single week there's a thing called the recoupling. So it'll either be the boys that choose the girl that they want to couple up with, or the girls choose. And the moral of the show is, if you're single, you get dumped from the island.
Right. Okay. Right. So there's real jeopardy. So basically, people have to pair up. So that's the key.
Yeah, you have to try and kiss anyone who
okay
you.
Okay,
just so one quick question, can I just intervene? The coupling up, as you call it,
yeah,
I mean, they're not, I mean, to ask a very boring, well, not a boring, a very exciting logistical question, they're not kind of physically coupling on TV in front of the cameras, are they, or are they?
They did in recent series when it was less famous, but right. I think now the stakes are higher, so that also adds another layer of complexity. It's like, are people really in it for love anymore?
Okay. So we are going to send five hunks and five babes, not to Mallorca, but to Dominic Sandbrook's Fantasy Island.
Pleasure Island, Tom.
Sorry, Dominic Sandbrook's Pleasure Island.
For those people who don't know, that was the name that the BBC wanted to give a TV documentary that I made. Just to be clear as well about one other thing, I'm so excited about this episode that I've lost my voice. So that adds another level of complexity to the discussion.
So we are going to send five historical hunks and five historical babes to Dominic Sandbrook's Fantasy Island.
Pleasure Island.
Pleasure Island. And they will then have to couple up. But Katie, we asked you to nominate 10 archetypes, and you sourced all your friends, didn't you? And so this is a kind of a group, your group conclusion as to the 10 archetypes of the contestants on Love Island. So could you just give them to us?
Yeah, of course. And I'm really sorry in advance if I've missed any, but I did ask my friends just in case. Okay, so I've put them into two groups, so men and women, but they could apply to either gender. But I think, Dom and Tom, you've just put them according to the genders I gave you. So men. So for the first one, I said player, very good looking, keeps changing his mind about who he wants to be with. The second one is the kind of sweet shit one who doesn't get anywhere and usually has quite a wholesome job. So the classic archetype of this is Dr. Alex in season 4. He was a doctor.
Of course, Dr. Alex, that's the name. Of course.
Number three is the traitor. He's very similar to the player, but pretends he's not. And pretends he's more into his partner than he is. And then at Castle and More, which usually happens in the fourth week, they get sent to another house where they have the opportunity to meet loads of more people. And they pretty much always come back with a new girl after they come back to the main villa. The number four is the producer's favourite. So usually pairs up with someone on the first day, stays with them and wins the competition. Always very likeable and unproblematic. And then, yeah, my dad loved this one. The funny one, a top lad, loves the lads, leader of the lads. So that's the five men. Then for the women, I've done number one, the bombshell, who turns up and causes havoc. So she steals someone else's man and doesn't care. The stupid but lovable one, the justifiably angry, jilted one, who will call her ex for a chat and tell him off in front of everyone. Another producer's favourite, he'll pair up with the other producer's favourite, stay with them and win the competition. And then the gossip, who lives for the drama and will ruminate on whether people actually like each other or are they in it for the fame.
Okay.
So those are the archetypes that I gave.
Thank
I
you,
hope
Danny.
They're faithful to the show.
Thank you very much. Okay, so Dominic, we've divided them up, haven't we?
We have indeed.
So we've each got five that we're putting into the house. So shall I go first?
Go for it.
So I've chosen the first male archetype, the player who's very good looking, keeps changing his mind about who he wants to be with. And the historical hottie that I am sending in is George Gordon, Lord Byron, brilliant poet, notorious lover. And to say that he was incredibly good looking. He had the one thing he was very self-conscious about, he had a club foot. And so he didn't actually like to kind of strip off.
That's a problem on the Love Island, Tom.
So that is an issue. However, he was a superb swimmer. He loved swimming because obviously then he was as mobile as he was tended to be immobile when walking. So presumably there's a swimming pool in this villa. So he'd be very, very proficient in the swimming pool.
Yeah, but what's he going to wear? Like a wetsuit? I mean, he's got to strip off.
Well, he'd have to wear... I think they're all wearing tight speedos, aren't they? Katie, is that right?
They all wear tight speedos.
And Byron swam the Hellespont, so I think he'd have no problem just spending the whole time in the swimming pool.
Yeah, there is also a swimming pool to show off.
Great. So Byron would be good there. Right. He's the kind of guy who cheated on his wife with his half-sister. That's the measure of the man.
That's very David Lloyd George.
I mean, he just had a sequence of explosively notorious affairs, perhaps the most notorious one, Lady Caroline Lamb. Wife of future Prime Minister Lord Melbourne, who was so obsessed with him that she sent him clippings of her pubic hair in a letter. She when he dumped her, she faked a suicide at the Duke of Wellington's ball. She got all her servants to dress up in white wispy dresses and to dance around a bonfire, and then she chucked all his letters in. And Byron Byron would be great. I mean, I guess the kind of the dialogue, what they talk, how they communicate with each other is very important on Love Island. So Byron was great. Byron's response to this, Lady Caroline Lamb crept into Byron's house and found one of his books and wrote in the fly life, "Remember me." And Byron replied, remember thee, till Lethe quench life's burning stream. Remorse and shame shall cling to thee and haunt thee like a feverish dream. Remember thee, I doubt it not. Thy husband too shall think of thee. By neither shalt thou be forgot, thou false to him, thou fiend to me. So that's the kind of banter that Byron would be bringing to
Tom, in very Byronic form, you're talking too much about Byron. We've got loads more to go through.
So excellent choice. And also a fantastic description of him from his personal physician, Lord Polidori, they were going on holiday together. And Polidori said of Byron that as soon as he reached his room, he fell like a thunderbolt upon the chambermaid.
They do write each other messages in tea towels when they ask people to be their girlfriend. So they'll write it on the lawn.
On the tea towel.
Say, I love you. So maybe he can write his poem in the tea towels.
All right. Who's your next one, Tom?
Well, are you not? I think it's your turn. You should give
us one. All right. So I had to choose I was told to choose the sweet one who doesn't get anywhere, usually does a wholesome job. And I've chosen the former US President Jimmy Carter. Who?
Good choice.
So Jimmy Carter, Katie, one-term president, former peanut farmer from Georgia. I think he's going to suffer, frankly, on a couple of things. One is he's a teetotaler. And I don't know if they're allowed alcohol on Love Island, but I think it doesn't speak of a sort of party animal spirit that he refused to have alcohol served in the White House.
But he had peanuts, didn't he? He was a peanut farmer.
Well, he was a peanut farmer. I don't know whether peanuts will avail him much on Love Island.
Might be popular.
He's married to Rosalyn, Jimmy Carter, and he's very uxorious. There's absolutely no suggestion of hanky-panky. They've got a daughter called Amy. But the sort of slightly complicating factor for Jimmy is that he's an evangelical Christian. He's born again. He's the first evangelical Christian sort of president in modern American history. But when he was running for the presidency in 1976, he gave an interview to Playboy in which he, in very sort of evangelical style, he sort of lambasted himself about being full of sin. And he said, I don't think of myself as better than other people. I'm actually a seasoned and practiced adulterer because I've looked because although I haven't actually done it in reality, I've looked on women with lust I often find myself looking on other women with lust, and I know that this is terrible behavior. So I think for somebody like Jimmy Carter, who's quite buttoned up, never drank, spent a lot of time with peanuts, going to Camp David and trying to do talks and trying to stop people use too much electricity, which is basically his thing, or too much petrol. I think the shock of Love Island, it would be very, very interesting.
he'd look quite good in his speedos, wouldn't he? Because he went for runs.
He went for a run and collapsed. So he famously went for a run and collapsed. He also went boating and was attacked by a killer rabbit, a swamp rabbit. So he's got he's kind of accident prone. I'm just anxious about the committing lust in his heart, because I think that sets a bad precedent. And if he's coming out with that, first of all, if he's coming out with that stuff on the island, what are the girls going to think? And secondly, is it all going to be too much for him? Is he going to suddenly abandon his faith and his kind of long cherished principles and just go wild? Or will he just sit in the corner and cry? It's very hard to say.
Well, I mean, that's all the excitement, isn't it?
It is.
Well, they have to do video confessions.
He'd be great at that.
Yeah, it's kind of like Big Brother. I think you probably have an existential crisis in one of the
films. Yeah.
Bless him.
But how would that play with the fans, Katie?
What do you mean? Like with the
Jimmy?
I think they'd love him.
You think they'd love him?
I think so. I think the memes would start pretty much straight away.
Yeah.
But they'd be kind of in good nature.
See, there's part of me that thinks that actually he could get quite far in the competition.
Well, we'll find out, won't we?
Usually they keep the kind of the one who's not very good at getting the women in for quite a long time.
Right, well, he's got hope then, hasn't he?
Because he's a fan favourite.
So that's Lord Byron and Jimmy Carter. Let's move on to the women. So I've got the stupid but lovable one. This was actually quite difficult because there aren't many stupid but lovable people who kind of make a name for themselves in history. They're either very clever or they're not very lovable. But the person that I have nominated is Frances Stuart, who lived between 1647 and 1702. She was born to royalist courtiers during the English Civil War. So they'd moved to Paris. And she was born 2 years before the execution of Charles I. So she grew up outside England. But when Charles II went back to England with the Restoration, she went, and first of all, she was a kind of lady-in-waiting to Charles II's mother and then to his wife, Catherine of Braganza. And she was stunningly beautiful. So she was known as La Belle Stuart. Everyone at Charles II's court was obsessed with her. Samuel Pepys went on and on about how gorgeous she was. Duke of Buckingham fell head over heels in love with her. But the biggest person who fell in love with her was Charles II himself, who was desperate to make her his mistress. And Frances Stuart was so dumb that she turned him down. And she was described by a French courtier that it would be difficult to imagine less brain combined with more beauty.
Wow.
And she was so beautiful that she became the model for the first portrait of Britannia that appeared on kind of medals and coins issued in 1667, which was the same year that she ended up finally pairing up with someone who was actually not a bad catch, the Duke of Richmond. So she became the Duchess of Richmond and then lived a very happy life. So she may have been dumb, but she was beautiful and happy. So I think that she'd be very popular.
Oh, excellent choice. She's going to go far.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. So I'll choose a woman. One of your categories, Katie, was the gossip. Mm. In it for the drama and ruminates on whether people actually like each other, in it for the money. So I've chosen another 1970s character. I've chosen Marcia Williams, Lady Falkander. So she was Harold Wilson's political secretary, but she was an immensely controversial figure in British life in the 70s. So she's from quite a humble background. She's the daughter, I think, of a Northamptonshire builder. And she's not an immensely good-looking woman, I think it's fair to say. So, but she's very charismatic and very clever. And she's always plotting and scheming in Wilson's sort of back office. She was married earlier and then divorced. She has two children, secretly with the political editor of the Daily Mail, which you might odd thing for a Labour insider to do. And that, but later on, there's a lot of controversy about whether or not she was accepting secret donations from shady businessmen to pay for her children's school fees, which you might say is, again, slightly interesting from a Labour special advisor. But basically, there was always this suspicion that hung around her about whether she was, A, pouring poison the whole time into Harold Wilson's ear and poisoning him against his ministers, and B, whether whether the two of them were secretly having an affair. And the story, one of his aides said that, claimed that in one of their many blazing rows that they would have in Downing Street, rows that would basically put sort of Boris and Carrie's carry-on to shame, sometimes she would raise her handbag and she'd tap her handbag and she'd point to it meaningfully and she'd say, "I have things in here that will destroy you." One call to the Daily Mail and you'll be finished. That's what I do with Tom, actually, like with your dad.
Yeah, it is.
The time.
It is.
Is
that Love Island behaviour, Kate?
But the other thing, is this Love Island behaviour? Wait for this. The other thing is apparently at one point, I think it's in, I'm not sure if it's in Downing Street or just before they get into Downing Street, they have a massive row. So that's Marcia Williams, Harold, and Mary, his wife. And Marcia rants at Mary. And she says, "I have only one thing to say to you. I went to bed with your husband 5 times in 1955, and it was not satisfactory." So, and then, of course, when Harold Wilson resigns, there are claims that basically she wrote his resignation honours list for him on lavender notepaper, the lavender list, as it was called, basically giving peerages to all her cronies in return for help with the school fees. So that's Marcia Williams. I think she'd be a combustible character on Love Island. I think the issue of the satisfactoriness or otherwise of the couplings would obviously, you know, play a part. And I don't know. I mean, I don't see her as a fan favourite, but I think certainly the newspapers would enjoy her presence.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of think everyone would say whoever found her deserves a pay rise because she's such good TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. So, I get a pay rise. Brilliant.
Okay. Yeah. I've got another woman next. And this is the bombshell who turns up and causes havoc, steals someone else's man and doesn't care.
Doesn't care.
So Katie, this is a person who's born Eliza Gilbert. So same name as your sister, but she's much flightier than our Eliza. So she was of Irish stock, but spent her early childhood in India, then came back, went to school in Scotland, in the northeast of England. She used to run naked through the streets, which caused some eyebrows to be raised. And this is at the beginning of the 19th century. So she's born in 1821. So this is the Victorian period. So you can imagine that running naked through the streets in Victorian Scotland was not a common thing. Age 16, she elopes with a soldier. So very kind of Pride and Prejudice. It goes back to India. She has a massive bust up with her husband, leaves him in Calcutta, comes back to London, and she has become a dancer. And not only has she become a dancer, but she pretends to be a Spanish dancer. And she has taken on the name of Lola Montez. So she performs as a dancer. She's probably not just a dancer. And she gets recognized as having been Eliza Gilbert. And so she flees to the continent, where she has a spectacular career as a courtesan. So in Paris, she has an affair with Alexandre Dumas, who writes the Three Musketeers, very, very shrewdly. And I think this is very Love Island behavior. She has an affair with a French guy who not only owns a newspaper, but is the dance correspondent. So can obviously write amazing reviews of Lola Montez, bigging her up.
Is she in it for money?
She's in it for the money because she just burns through men like nobody's business. And having kind of got off with this newspaper critic, she then gets her biggest catch, who is Ludwig I of Bavaria, who basically allows her to run the country until there's a revolution in 1848. And Lola Montez has to kind of go running off. So having been kicked out from Bavaria, she goes back to London, where she marries again. This is a bigamous relationship. So, you know, illegal. So she flees to America, where she has further marriages, further affairs, people that she's had an affair with, end up getting murdered or disappearing. She goes to Australia, where she She has a notorious dart, the spider dance, which kind of is a kind of can-can. She horsewhips people who annoy her. Yeah. And she's just, it's just generally, it's kind of chaos, drama. She'd be an amazing, amazing contestant. She's had a huge impact on literature. So she's probably the model for Irene Adler in the Sherlock Holmes story, A Scandal in Bohemia. And in the Flashman series, Flashman has an affair with her in Royal Flash. So she would be a combustible, highly entertaining, highly glamorous a contender. She could do her spider dance, I think would be a great fan favorite. Yeah. And she would just, I mean, I think she'd find it very hard to stay coupled with one person, unless she could be absolutely certain that person was going to win, in which case she'd probably stick with him.
Such a good choice. She really reminds me of my favorite all-time Love Islander, Maura. Which will mean nothing to you.
Okay.
But she's the best person I've ever seen on TV. And she was also Irish.
She surely wasn't the first person you'd ever seen on TV. You must have seen people on TV before.
But she's the best person I've ever seen on TV.
Oh, the best person. I thought you said the first person.
Oh, not the first. But she
had a terrible image insight then into the Holland household. You're banned from watching television. Until
Love Island.
Until Love Island.
Until Love Island comes on.
Victorian dad gets it wrong.
Yeah.
But there's actually a dance competition.
I've got a dancer up my sleeve, Katie, but I'll hold her back for the time being because I think she's a bit similar to Lola Montez. But also I want her to have the maximum possible impact, so I'll bring her in near the end. So just one more before the break. So you wanted a traitor, didn't you? You wanted a male traitor, very similar to the player, but with the difference that he pretends to be more into his partner than he is and then randomly pairs up with somebody else. So when I saw the word traitor, I thought, I'm just going to go in quite big with this. I'm going to go with the traitor. So I've gone with Judas.
That's a massive choice.
So Judas enters the island. So what we know of Judas, I think there is some doubt about whether Judas is there for love or whether he's there for the money, or more specifically for the 30 pieces of silver. Judas has got form. I think it's fair to say that although some of the other Love Islanders may not have heard of each other, they'll all have, by and large, have heard of Judas. So he comes in with baggage.
Yeah.
And he's already guilty of one absolutely colossal betrayal comes into the island. But the interesting thing about Judas, and what I think makes him a wild card in this competition, I mean, he's got a lot of meme potential because he ended up hanging himself from a tree, didn't he, Tom?
Yeah, he did. Fame didn't make him happy. Fame and wealth didn't make him happy.
And also with the 30 pieces of silver. But also the truth of the matter is, when it comes to sort of affairs of the heart, Judas is something of an enigma. We don't know anything about his romantic history, do we? I mean, oddly, the Bible is silent on Judas's love life. So we just don't know how he's going to interact with the others. How's he going to get on with Lola Montez? Will he be pals with Lord Byron? Jimmy Carter obviously is going to have massive issues with Judas.
Yeah.
From the get-go.
Yeah, yeah, he is.
Because Jimmy, he is. You know, will be horrified to see Judas pitch up.
I mean, there is, of course, the plot twist that you get in Jesus Christ Superstar, where actually he's betraying Jesus simply to try and get Jesus to, you know, reveal himself as the Messiah. So that suggests a kind of a talent for tricksy behavior, for kind of psychological play that doesn't always come off. So that might be interesting.
I think the sort of Judas, Marcia Williams, I could see them, if not coupling up, then certainly they could play an interesting part, stirring up the others against one another.
Yeah.
And so on.
Okay.
So anyway, I'm particularly keen, Katie, to see how Judas gets on in this competition.
So do you think his motives might be more pure?
Maybe.
Well, this is the enigma.
I mean, this is the fascination of it, isn't it? And that will be for the audience to decide.
I mean, a man who's already sold himself for 30 pieces of silver, 50 grand is a hell of a lot of money to Judas.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
What will he do for 50 grand?
I think on that cliffhanger, we should take a break. And when we come back, we'll look at the other five contenders.
This episode is brought to you by Etsy. Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Now until May 12th, get up to 30% off personalized jewelry, style, decor, and so many other items mom will love. And if you want her to know you put a ton of thought into her present, use Gift Mode. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting so you can easily find well-crafted, original, and affordable pieces from small shops. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about mom, and Gift Mode instantly gives you curated ideas based on hundreds of personas. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
I'm Anthony Scaramucci, former White House Director of Communications and Wall Street financier.
And I'm Katty Kay, U.S. Special Correspondent for BBC Studios. I've been covering American politics for almost 3 decades.
Welcome to The Rest is Politics U.S., brought to you by Goalhanger.
Go on, tell us, were those donations you made, like Obama in 2008, was that idealism? Were you hoping to get something out of these campaigns that would serve your own business interests, for example?
So I think this will either make this podcast incredibly successful, Katty, or people will be horrified and they'll shut it off right now, because I'm going to be very real with you. The Obama donation, I had gone to law school with President Obama. We were not classmates. I was a few years ahead of him. It was 2007. He was then Senator Obama. I had a check in my breast pocket. I went over to the senator. I said, Senator, I said, you and I didn't really know each other in law school, but I'm about to hand you a big check. Can I lie to my friends and tell them that you and I knew each other in law school? Well, Obama looks at me, had the best smile in American politics since Jack Kennedy.
Forever.
Yeah. He lights up. He looks at me and says, I'll tell you what, if you double the amount of the check, we'll take it back to Hawaii. Okay. And I looked at him. I said, you're done. I had another check in my pocket. I ripped it up. I doubled the amount of the check. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've been to more White House Christmas parties during the Obama administration than the Trump administration.
In this pivotal year for the United States, democracy, and world affairs, Britain's biggest podcast, The Rest is Politics, is launching stateside.
Uncovering secrets from inside the Biden and Trump inner circles and how they shape the world's most important economy, but also the global economy too.
New episodes are released every Friday morning.
Just search The Rest is Politics US wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Love Island. The tension is mounting. The excitement is at fever pitch. We're joined by top Love Island connoisseur, enthusiast, meme generator, and all-round expert, Katie Holland, who is, of course, the daughter of top TV historian and Spider-Man Tom Holland. And Katie, we've done 6 of the Love Island contestants, haven't we? We've had some pretty big names, unexpected names. Byron, President Carter, Judas, Francis Stewart, Marcia Williams, and that's it, isn't it? And
Leila Montez.
And Tom, you're due to nominate your next.
Yeah, so I'm going to go for a man this time. I'm going to go for a lad. And this one is the lad of lads. So this is the funny one, the top lad who loves the lads, leader of the lads. And I've gone for General George Armstrong Custer, who, great 19th century general, 1839 to 76, great general, chiefly famous for having led the 7th Cavalry into the largest concentration of Native Americans gathered in the 19th century and being wiped out.
Yeah, you say he's a great general, Tom. He's a terrible general.
But the thing about the Battle of Little Bighorn is that it gave the Sioux and their allies probably the single best moment of the 19th century. And I think that's what Custer was all about. He was about giving people a great time. People adored him. He was nothing but trouble, but people completely adored him. So he was married. He was married to Libby. And she wrote about Custer that my husband used to tell me that he believed he was the happiest man on earth. And I cannot help thinking that he was. Everything he did, he loved. He loved being in the cavalry. He loved having fun. Sitting Bull, who was in command of the Native American forces at the Battle of Little Bighorn, said that he'd been told that when Custer died, he killed a man as he died, and then he laughed. So his very last thing was to kill someone and then laugh, which basically sums Custer up. And the whole course of his career was a kind of constant succession of scrapes, jams, and then people adored him so much that they would let him get out. So he was at West Point. He came bottom at West Point. He got kind of court-martialed because he was supposed to be on sentry duty, and he went off and got on a kind of lad's piss-up in the local town. But everyone liked him so much that they let him off. Then the Civil War happened, and he was absolutely brilliant in the Civil War. He had these kind of golden ringlets. He loads of cavalry dash. He charged around. And again, everybody adored him. At the end of the Civil War, he was the youngest general ever in the US Army. And from that point on, he went out to the Great Plains, and he just gallivanted around. His superiors would say, go and do this. He'd go off. He traveled everywhere with a team of Irish wolfhounds. And so if he kind of saw a deer or a buffalo, he'd go charging off after them and completely leave his troops stranded. And there was one occasion where a whole load of soldiers went out to find him, got ambushed by Native Americans. They had their eyeballs taken out and put on rocks. Oh, wow. They had their testicles cut off and put in their mouths. Custer was told about this, and instead of feeling guilty about it, he went, how exciting for them. That must have been so exciting for them to be stalked and killed. What a thrill. And so that's basically what he is. Everything is a laugh. It's a thrill. It's excitement. And people cannot help but forgiving him for all the kind of terrible scrapes that he gets into.
Tom, I'm not going to try and torpedo Custer's chances, because I know you want him to do well. But I'm not right in thinking that by the time of Little Bighorn, A, he's a busted flush. B, he's starting to lose his hair, I think, which is surely a Love Island problem.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't there a counter-argument that he's actually a terrible general?
Yeah, he's a terrible general. I when I said great, I mean great in the kind of Love Island sense that he looks like a general.
Okay.
So
not if he's losing his hair, not if the ringlets are beginning to thin.
But he's entering it at the stage where, in the words of one admirer, he is as beautiful as Absalom with his yellow curls.
Okay, well.
So he's a lad.
Yeah, he does sound a lad.
How do you think he'd do, Katie?
Well, I feel like the fact that he's not a great general doesn't really matter, because they mention their jobs in the first week and then it doesn't really come
up. He's not there to fight. He's not there to fight the Sioux, is he?
Well, also, I feel like he'd bring it into the games. He'd use, like, you know, general imagery to rally the troops, rally his lads. I think he'd do really well.
He'd love all the games. He'd love, you know, he'd endlessly be playing pranks. He'd be stealing people's speedos and all that. It'd just be nonstop bants.
I feel like he'd put on the lady's fake tan just to see how it suited his golden locks.
He would. Like that. Do you know what he'd be? He'd be General Banter.
He would. He really would. I love him already.
All right. Okay. Well, I've got, so my other female contestant, who deep down I think should win. Okay. See, I'm not going to put the pressure on you. I think she should win. She's born in about 500 AD, maybe from Syria. Maybe she's from Cyprus. She's the daughter of a dancer and an actress, and her name is Theodora.
Hey.
And she rises from humble beginnings to become Empress of Rome. Now, the thing about Theodora, so she ends up marrying the Emperor Justinian, and Justinian and Theodora are probably the single most famous couple to have been, to have ruled the Eastern Roman Empire. So that's the successor state. Well, it's not the successor state, it's the continuation of the Roman Empire in the East, Byzantium, as it's called. They're one of the two or three most famous imperial couples of all time. Theodora is a formidable character. So when these riots in Constantinople, after the chariot racing, the so-called Nike riots, when people are shouting Nike, Nike, sort of victory, victory, and smashing everything up and rampaging through Constantinople, and the emperor is considering fleeing, it's Theodora who famously stiffens his resolve by saying, the purple, the imperial purple cloak, makes the best kind of funeral shroud. In other words, I'd rather die an empress than live as a commoner. And they stand, they stay and they kill everybody and survive. But the thing about Theodora is Theodora herself had been an actress and a dancer before she became empress. So that scandalized the kind of old elite at the court. And she is the subject of one of the raciest and most incendiary biographies ever written, The Secret History, by a man called Procopius, who had been a courtier and had sort of fallen out with the imperial couple. And he fills it with this sort of, frankly, quite pornographic stuff about Theodora's past. So he says before she was empress, her venal charms were abandoned to a promiscuous crowd of citizens and strangers of every knight and of every position. The fortunate lover who had been promised a night of enjoyment was often driven from her bed by a stronger or more wealthy favourite, which is very Love Island. Procopius says, often when she was alone with other actors, she would undress in their midst and arch her back provocatively, advertising like a peacock, both to those who had had experience of her and to those who had not yet had that privilege, her trained suppleness, which I think is also very Love Island behaviour.
That is.
Often she would go picnicking with 10 young men or more, in the flower of their strength and virility, and dallied with them all the whole night through. And when they wearied of the sport, she would approach their servants, perhaps 30 in number, and engage with each of these. And even thus, she found no allayment of her craving. And though, now I apologize to some listeners for this, although she flung wide 3 gates to the ambassadors of Cupid, she lamented that nature had not similarly unlocked the straits of her bosom, so that she might there have contrived a further welcome to his emissaries. So there's a lot of stuff like this. And there's also some carry on with geese, isn't there, Tom, or swans?
There is. So there aren't any geese in the... I suppose there could be, couldn't there?
It's my Pleasure Island, so I can...
Pleasure Island, so you could have them. Okay, so she did stuff with geese I don't think would make it onto primetime TV.
Yeah.
But did she? Or was that a rumour?
Well, that's the question, isn't it?
Well, that's the nature of... This is the nature of...
That's the question.
Of reality and Dominic, TV in the age of social media, isn't it? We don't know what's true and what's not.
And also, fair to point out that she does end up becoming a saint. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, which side of her character she brings out. The side that does things with geese, or the side that just spends the whole time in church praying.
Because she's very religious, isn't she, Tom?
She ends up religious, yeah. Yeah.
So I think there's a lot going on with her. And frankly, Katie, I'll be astounded if she doesn't win. I'll be shocked.
I do think she's the most interesting one. She kind of reminds me of Molly May in season 5.
Does she? Did Molly, was she friends with geese?
Well, I don't know. There's just quite a lot to say. Because I think the actress background's quite interesting.
Yeah, the arching the back, all that stuff. I mean,
well,
come on,
so Molly May was an influencer before she joined Love Island. And so I think people had a perception of her that she was in it to win.
Right.
That she was good at playing up to the cameras. So maybe that would be Theodora's criticism on Twitter.
I think she would. Yes. Some people might. Well, obviously the Procopius took a great dislike to her. And
I was basically just making it up, I think.
I think sort of Guardian readers will take against her, because Procopius would have been a Guardian reading. Wouldn't you, Tom?
No, he's a Daily Mail. He's just making stuff up.
No, Procopius is...
You know, he's making stuff up for the... No. He's tabloid. It's at pure tabloid press.
I think that's fake news. Right. That's,
okay. All right. So I've also got an ancient member of royalty. So I'm going for... it's another woman. Justifiably angry, jilted one. Almost always a woman will pull her ex for a chat and berate him in front of everyone. He won't care. So I have gone for Olympias, fourth century queen from Epirus, who ended up marrying Philip of Macedon and is the mother of Alexander the Great. And she had a tempestuous relationship with Philip, who was not a good boy, was constantly cheating on her. And Olympias was a terrifyingly angry person, very, very formidable person. You wouldn't really want to annoy her, but Philip did. And so there are all kinds of rumours that in the end she ended up having him assassinated, which would be a kind of an extreme way to win Love Island. But I think Olympias, you know, if that's what she decided it took, she'd do it. Her other party trick, and again, perhaps this is something that would enable her to go directly up against Theodora, is that she's supposed to have gone to bed with giant snakes.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't know how that would go down with the watching fans, but so she would offer fans snakes and an ability to eliminate anyone who annoyed her.
Was her reputation that she was a spurned woman, and she never got him back really in the end.
Yeah,
well, he had multiple wives, didn't he?
He was endlessly marrying other queens, and also he played the dirty trick. So Olympias was the sister of the king of Epirus, and so she could always rely on him. But Philip kind of stabbed her in the back by sending off their daughter to marry him. So it was all very incestuous and devious and treacherous. So
did he have the last laugh? Really?
No, because he ended up dead, and she survived him. So I offer you Olympias.
Yeah, I think she's controversial, isn't she?
Yeah,
I think she might pull people's backs up the wrong way. The snake stuff is a problem, I think.
I don't think she's going to do that well.
Okay, well,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay, no, fine.
Have we just got one left?
One left, yeah.
So I'm in this to win this. Actually, I want to see my contestants win.
I can tell.
So there's one category left, which is producer's favourite, always very likeable and unproblematic. And so I thought I'd go for somebody very monogamous, uxorious, who pairs up quickly and then sticks by their partner for the rest of the competition. Somebody who a lot of Rest Is History audience, you know, who they'll already like because they know him as a great man of history.
And trust him.
And they trust him. Yeah, they trust him. And he's, of course, former Prime Minister Stanley Baldwin.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Stanley Baldwin, Katie, as I'm sure you know, you don't need me to tell you because I know Stanley Baldwin's name will trip off your tongue. Stanley Baldwin was three times prime minister in the 1920s and 1930s. Criminally forgotten now, it pains me to say. A man of the Midlands. He appears very stolid, kind of paternalistic, conservative. He gave a tenth of his fortune to pay off the national debt anonymously at the end of the First World War. So he's incredibly kind man, Katie. And I think that will count for a lot with the fans. I think what will also count with the fans is he's not boring. So he's not Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter has committed lust in his heart, as we know. Stanley was almost kicked out of Harrow as a boy for writing his own pornography.
Interesting.
And then I'd forgotten this, that when he then went on to Cambridge, where he got third, his time at Trinity College, Cambridge, was blighted by the fact that when he went to Cambridge, as soon as he arrived at Trinity, they said, oh, we've got a new master of the college. And to his horror, the new master of the college was the headmaster of Harrow.
That's awful.
Who had never forgiven him for writing this porn. And basically was always glaring at him or giving him, you know, muttering under his breath as he passed Baldwin. So that was a problem for Baldwin. But one more thing about Baldwin, which I think will endear him to the fans, is Baldwin and his wife Lucy had, I think, six children, I can't remember. But one of them, Oliver, who also became an MP for the Labour Party and was gay and lived with his friend Johnny, his partner, all his days. And Stanley, defying the conventions of the times, was absolutely fine with this, would write letters to them as a couple, have them over for dinner,
yeah,
all this kind of thing. Very, very progressive, good behaviour. Now, on top of that, now we need to talk about his love life. So this will definitely, I think this actually will tempt Tom away from some of Tom's own contenders. Stanley met his wife, Lucy. Lucy, when you look at pictures of her, is not a natural Love Island contestant. I think it's fair to say she's quite a large woman, but she's photographed in later life. So let's you know, give her the benefit of the doubt. But he met Lucy and he was, as a young man, and what literally bowled him over was that when he first laid eyes upon her, she was bowling in a cricket match.
Wow.
Because she was a very, very keen cricketer. She played for the White Heather Club, which is, I think, the first women's, or one of the first women's cricket clubs. She was an excellent batsman or batswoman. Her average, Tom, do you know what her average was?
Yeah.
I'm asking you to guess.
Oh, 36.
No, her batting average was 62.
Wow.
Higher at the time than the top professional men's player. So she was an absolutely first-class cricketer.
Do you know, she will bowl over the fans, Dominic.
Stanley Baldwin was immensely impressed by her. He would take the train to go and watch her play cricket. And then when he would take the train home again, on the way home, he would get off Katie at every stop to send her a telegram saying how much he was missing her.
Okay, so, yeah.
Stanley Baldwin, I think, I mean, he's not in this for the money because he's giving his money away. He's in this for love.
But he didn't adequately prepare us for the Second World War. So there is that.
That is a minor no.
So that is a
that is there is more that. Fake news.
There is that. So that is perhaps a problem. But
I feel like you're just jealous because Dominic's choices are so
No, I'm not in it to win. I mean, I'm not in it to win. I'm in it to provide the fans with the best show. That's the thing. So just before you choose who couples up with who, we just need to run through who looks good in skimpy swimwear, because that's key, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so who we got? We've got
Lord Byron.
Byron will look good.
Yeah, General Custer.
General Custer would look good.
Jimmy Carter, not good.
Jimmy Carter, probably not good. He's a bit scrawny. Yeah, a bit scrawny. Stanley Baldwin, he wouldn't look good. I mean, he looks good in a tweed suit and a hat, but he's not going to look good in Speedos, is he? I mean, even you would admit that, Dominic.
I would admit that, Dom. Yeah.
And who was the fifth man? I can't remember.
Judas.
Oh, Judas. Judas. I have no idea. But he'd probably look quite good.
Well, that's the thing.
I mean, he's been roaming around Galilee for 3 years, so he's probably quite
tanned. Quite buff. Yeah.
He'd be tanned. I think he'd look good. So, and then the girls, Leila Montez would obviously look sensational. Theodora would look sensational. Frances Stewart would look sensational. Olympias would probably look frightening. I just think there'd be something about her that would be, she'd probably have lots of menacing tattoos. And then I can't remember who the fifth one was.
Marcia Williams, Lady Fulton. Oh,
what would she look like in? What would she look like twerking?
I can't even speak. I'm laughing so much, but also I've completely lost my voice.
Okay, so
I think Marcia Williams probably is in the Stanley Baldwin category when it comes to the swimwear. Okay. I don't think it's her strong suit.
My favourite.
Okay. So, Katie Dunn, can you pair up those 10 contenders?
So this is sort of week one, is it?
Quite hard.
That's the fun of it, isn't it?
Okay. So I think I think instinctively Byron and Olympias would pair up.
Sorry. Right. Yeah.
I think she'd want him because he wants everyone else.
Yeah. And he would be awful for her.
He'd be awful. And I think the producers would make them get together through games or
excellent pairing.
Yeah. Okay, I'm glad you thought that was nice and pairing because I wasn't really sure.
No, you're the arbiter. You choose.
Okay. I think Theodora and Stanley Baldwin.
Oh,
yeah. That's my dream couple. I'd like to have them over for dinner.
Dominic, I cannot. I mean, that is so completely your dream pairing. Okay, so Theodora and Stanley Baldwin.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So that's the second couple.
Do you need to say why, or can I just give you the pair?
Yeah.
So obvious. That's as obvious. I mean,
but why do you think?
Well, why is it Dominic's dream pairing?
Because Stanley Baldwin's his hero and Theodora is his heroine.
Oh, I did it for you.
He's always loved them. But Katie, why do you think that Stanley Baldwin and Theodora would make a natural couple?
Because I think they both have quite cheeky sides to them.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. Okay, that's a good reason. That's a good reason.
They're quite good at, they're pretty good people.
At monogamy, yeah.
Heart of gold.
Yeah.
And I think Theodora would be, you know, Stanley Baldwin's a leader. She's good at helping a leader. I think people at first wouldn't trust her, that they would think she was just with him because everyone likes him and that it's a clear way to the money.
You know, she's a shrewd, intelligent. And so rather than marry someone who spends all her time playing cricket, maybe if he's matched up with someone who could say, you know, rearm.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah.
You're looking at a very different story of the origins of the Second World War with Theodora. Yeah. Narrative
stuff. Yes, I think Theodora and Stanley would be quite suited together, actually.
Okay, good.
Okay, Marcy Williams. I just don't know what to do with her. Okay, I feel like Leila Montez and General Custer would have a good time.
Yeah, I think they'd be
definitely would. I can't believe I'm taking this sufficiently seriously that I'm diligently noting down what you're saying.
Okay, so that's I think I agree. They completely go together. They are gin and tonic. Fourth couple.
Okay, my fourth couple. Marcy Williams and Judas.
Yes. Marcy Williams and Judas. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
That, I mean, that would be a toxic pairing, wouldn't it?
Well, if she's tapping a handbag and threatening to ring the Daily Mail about him.
But I think, because I think she'd be, but I think she'd be intrigued by his motives, and she'd say, yeah, maybe we would be a good power couple. I feel like they'd match in each other.
Yeah,
let's join up and make sweet treachery.
Right. Yes.
And I think they tried to sabotage everyone else.
It would. Yeah.
So that they could win. But I'm not sure they'd make it to the fight. Well,
no,
I guess
no,
it's for the fans to say, isn't it? But
well, it's not for you. It's for you to say, actually.
And then I finally I put Jimmy Carter and Francis Stewart.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that working. But they're both sweet people.
But Jimmy Carter's done very well for himself there, I think. Unaccountably well.
Yeah.
I think he'd be completely obsessed with her, but would be panicking in the.
I think that's a very, very sweet pairing.
Right. But somebody has to go, right?
They do, but Dominic and Katie, back me up here. Part of the complication is that you then you bring new people into the mix, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's also part of it. They're parachuted in. So Dominic, what I thought we should do is that we should, before Katie decide who gets thrown off, because we're going to have four couples that go up to the public vote. So one of these four, five couples needs to go.
Okay.
Before we do that, let's introduce three lads and three babes in their tight speedos and their bikinis to see whether Katie thinks that any of these might be successful in kind of worming their way in. I've chosen three lads. You've chosen three babes.
I'm gutted that you've incriminated me in this, but go on.
Yeah. Okay. So the three lads that I've chosen, and all of these are friends of the show. So regular listeners to this podcast will probably know who they are. Okay. So the first person I'm introducing, well, actually they're a pair of lads. They're good old friends. The first one is Dietrich von Hülsen-Häßler, who, Katie, is the chief of the German general staff, but is chiefly known for the way that he died. So he was in a hunting lodge with the Kaiser and all the top German generals. The Kaiser's feeling a bit down. Dietrich von Hülsen-Häßler goes out of the room in midsupper and suddenly bursts back in dressed in a tutu, pirouettes, does Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy, and then keels over dead. Now, do you think that this would be a party trick that would appeal to any of the girls in that we've got there?
I think, because that reminds me very much of a moment in 2019.
Oh, really?
Well, what happened? Tell us all.
So there's a dancing challenge where you have to try and get your partner's heart rate up.
And it reminds
me of Curtis a bit.
So there's a couple of dancers in the mix. I mean, experienced dancers.
Yeah.
Theodora, Lola Montez.
Maybe Lola Montez.
You think she ditched General Custer for Dietrich Graf von Hülsen-Häßler?
Well, I'm not sure.
I don't think she would.
Well, listen, Katie, the two other lads who come in. The next one is Dietrich von Hülsen-Häßler's friend, the Kaiser.
Oh, gosh.
But disaster, because he's come in his tight speedos looking good. But he's wearing deck shoes. He's wearing deck shoes. They're the wrong shoes. He's got the wrong end of the stick.
Oh, no.
But would the fact he's wearing deck shoes...
Exactly.
I mean, the wrong footwear. I don't know how that would play.
What would Olympias or Marcia Williams
Okay, and the third the third friend of the show who's coming in is General Gordon, Chinese Gordon, great imperial hero in China, in Khartoum, ends up dying there. But he's possibly not the ideal person to go on Love Island, because it was said of him that the presence of ladies, especially fashionable ladies, filled him with uneasiness. And on one occasion, he went to the ballet in Naples, sat there for about 5 minutes, was so appalled by the spectacle of what the ballerinas were wearing that he stormed out crying, "You call that civilization?" So I don't know whether you think any of those would really... I mean, there's no obligation.
I think they're all really good. I think they're really good choices, but I don't think... I think General Gordon would have the same luck as Jimmy Carter, really.
Yeah.
Right.
I think they'd make him go on loads of dates and he'd find it horrible.
He'd really hate it.
Would some people walk out, don't they? Don't some people walk?
Yeah, someone walked out last week, actually, because he thought, this isn't for me.
I see General Gordon as somebody who would walk out quite quickly.
I would agree with that, Dominic.
Yeah, I think he would walk out very quickly. So probably none of them, then.
That's disappointing.
Well, I don't think deck shoes are enough to get you booted off the island, but
okay.
I don't think instinctively, I don't think that none of these people are speaking to me as his soulmate.
Okay, fine. So Dominic, the three girls.
So the three ladies. So I think it's fair to say, isn't it, Katie, that Love Island is a story like all reality TV shows of heroes and villains, and the producers like to create villains.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd bring on one of history's great undisputed villains, and that is the writer Virginia Woolf. So Mrs. Woolf enters the house. I mean, people will know her, modernist writer, author of Mrs. Dalloway, To the Lighthouse, and so on. Also a towering world-class snob. Who's always writing in her diary about how she hates her servants and wishes they're all dead and they're horribly fat and common and all this sort of thing.
Well, she wouldn't have to worry about fat people, would she?
No, that's not going to be a problem. But the issue of, I mean, Theodora is from the sort of wrong side of the tracks. Lola Montez, Virginia Woolf, I personally see her trying to form an alliance early on with Marcia Williams. They both have a sort of equine look.
Yes.
So they might bond. They might bond over that. Katie, the decision is yours.
I know.
I think Virginia Woolf would get on quite well with Judas.
Oh, Dominic.
But you may disagree. I mean, she hated Stanley Baldwin, by the way. There was bad blood there. Because Stanley Baldwin, you know, represents everything that Mrs. Woolf despises in the politics of the 1920s.
So the producers know that, of course.
Bringing on an ex or something.
So when she enters
the show...
When
you've got bad blood before, yeah.
I think the cameras are on Stanley Baldwin's face.
Yeah.
He's rolling his eyes.
Like, my God, it's Virginia.
Okay, who else, Dominic?
So Virginia Woolf. My next one... I have to say Tom was slightly instrumental in some of these choices. The next one is another great fan favorite, though some people might say another villainess, somebody who's going to have a little bit of an issue possibly with Marcia Williams, and that's the late Baroness Thatcher. So Mrs. Thatcher, now she's an interesting one because, A, she loves dancing. She's well up for the dancing challenges because when she visited the White House in, I think, 1981, Dennis and the ambassador and so on had to basically prise her away from receptions because she wanted to keep dancing into the small hours. And actually, when they got to New York at the end of the trip, she again said at the end of one evening, I'd love to now go dancing. And they were like, no, Prime Minister, you can't go dancing. So that's an issue. But
she wouldn't like sitting around by a swimming pool, would she?
No, because she hated holidays. This is a problem. She was always trying to work. She would undoubtedly bring work with her. I worry that she would argue with Marcia Williams a lot about inflation or something. I mean, she didn't get on with Jimmy Carter. So again.
Oh, I was about to say maybe that could be a.
He was a teetotaler. She likes a drink of an evening. She went to the White House and had a terrible time when he was the host.
But they're both quite uxorious, aren't they? So.
Well, they are. They are. Although she had an eye for kind of raffish, slightly sleazy lounge lizard men.
Maybe Byron.
She loves that.
She'd
love Byron. She hated Jimmy Carter because he's boring. She'd love Byron. She'd love Custer. I actually think deep down she would have a slight soft spot for Judas.
Gosh, yeah.
No, she's very devout.
But the Methodism is an issue there.
No, I don't think so.
Virginia Woolf, I don't think is strong enough to tear apart Marcia Williams and Judas for me.
Oh, really? Okay.
And what about your third choice, Dominic?
Yeah, well, what Kate is thinking about, Mrs. Thatcher, the third choice... a real favourite of Tom's this, and I have to say he put me up to this.
Yeah, I did.
It's it appears to be the late Empress Poppaea, wife of the Emperor Nero.
Ooh.
But it must become quite quickly apparent, Tom, if it's this whole swimwear stuff and all this business, that actually this is Nero's... It's a slave, isn't he?
He's a freedman. He's a freed boy.
A freed boy called Sporus, who Nero has had castrated to make him look like Poppaea.
Which I think is... something perhaps that the Love Island production hasn't yet investigated. So we're ahead of the curve.
They definitely haven't, no.
So they haven't introduced a eunuch.
So this is very progressive. I mean, there's probably going to be complaints on social media about Love Island going woke with this.
I know exactly what would happen to Sporus, actually. That's the one I do know.
What's going to happen?
I think Sporus and Byron will get together.
So what happens to Olympias?
Leaving Olympias jilted and booted off the island. Because if you're single, you can't survive.
Olympias booted off the island. But hold on. At the point that Sporus jumps into bed with Byron.
Yeah.
I mean, in desperation, isn't she going to try and make a move on Judas or something? Or on Margaret Thatcher? I mean...
Well, listen, we need to decide who our couples are, Katie. So you need to decide. So are you booting Olympias off and Byron is pairing up with Sporus?
Yeah, that's the one I know.
Interjection. Surely Olympias would make a move on Jimmy Carter rather than Francis Stewart.
And poor Francis Stewart is so dumb that she'd be powerless. She'd wake up and find three enormous snakes in her bed, and it would never cross her mind that someone was out to get her because she'd be too dumb.
Do you think Olympias would have things to talk about with Jimmy Carter?
Yeah, I think Olympias is a woman with a hard-headed understanding of power. So I think that she'd be able to help Jimmy Carter with the energy crisis, and certainly she'd be able to help him with his running. She'd give him
I like that. Okay.
So
Byron and Sporus.
Byron and Sporus.
And then let's go for Olympias and Jimmy Carter. And then let's get rid of Francis Stewart.
And the rest are all as is.
Yeah.
Stanley Baldwin and Theodora.
Judas is still with Marcia.
Yeah, I feel quite strongly about that.
Wow, okay.
And then Custer and Lola.
Yeah.
Okay, so Katie, so the five historical Love Island 2022 contestants are Lord Byron and Sporus, Jimmy Carter and Olympias, Stanley Baldwin and Theodora, Judas and Marcia Faulkner, General Custer and Lola Montez. Now, only four can go forward to the public vote. Which of those five couples are you going to evict?
I think it might have to be Judas and Marcia Williams.
Wow, that is okay. A bombshell for Judas.
That is a bombshell. He's gone back. He just can't win, can he?
I mean,
I just don't think people. I think people don't trust them.
He was in it for the money, and now nothing.
And now nothing.
Yeah, I think it was a bit transparent, maybe his motives. So the public didn't like it.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that's the result. We will put this up to vote on Twitter. Byron and Sporus, Carter and Olympias, Baldwin and Theodora, Custer and Montez. Amazing. But there can be only one victor, only one winning couple, and it is up to you, the public, to decide. And so we will announce the result in a special bonus episode that we will put out in a day after tomorrow. And we will go over the entrails, have a look, analyse the drama, and crown our 2022 Historical Love Island champions. Thanks very much for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Rest is History. For bonus episodes, early access, ad-free listening, and access to our chat community, please sign up at restishistorypod.com. That's restishistorypod.com.